Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. What's more fitting than a song about Atlanta from a band named following the Atlanta Braves World Series victory last night? We'll continue to talk about it, enjoy it, react to it throughout the afternoon. We'll also hear how it sounded throughout the world coming up a little bit later on. Braves got their first World Series championship since 1995. It's been a long time coming. Enjoy it.
Although it literally did not burn last night, so.
Well, I don't know. What was the reaction like? Did they riot in the streets of Atlanta?
Oh, good question. Good question.
Did they burn cars and such? I saw a video from over the weekend. Michigan State, after they beat Michigan. And, this, you know, this is a student, so you have 18 to 21-year-olds who are probably under the influence. They were flipping over cars. I never got that when you win. Why do you do that? They're flipping over people's cars. They were smashing windows. Like, you won the game. What are you rioting for? So I don't know what the scene was like last night in Atlanta. In the case of Atlanta, and it happened in Philadelphia when they finally won the Super Bowl, I guess you're just taking out decades of frustration. If you riot in that sense, if you have like a wild celebration where you're breaking things.
And I'm sure these guys are glad they named the band Atlanta also.
Yeah.
Because now it's paying off.
Yeah. So creative. They're from Atlanta, so they named their band Atlanta, and they sang about Atlanta. Who could have figured?
So the secret is, name your band after a place. Atlanta.
That's true.
Kansas.
Yeah.
Chicago.
That's true.
Asia. Europe.
Yeah, because then there's always an easy reason to have to play your music. If you ever talk about those areas, such as this. If the Braves ever win a World Series. The Braves, they thought, you know what? They're going to play our music all the time because the Braves are so good. They're going to win so many World Series over the next 15 years with this pitching staff of Greg Maddux and Smoltz and Glavin. And then, never happened. They won one. But this year, 88 wins. They lose their best pitcher, their best hitter, and now they win the World Series when they had less than a 1% chance back on July 31st. Go figure. As they say, that's baseball, Susan. Let's talk some golf. We'll continue to celebrate the Braves World Series throughout the afternoon and also break down the initial college football playoff rankings last night. But every Wednesday, we talk golf at this time with our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, who is on Twitter at JSchill, writes for PGA Magazine, and he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you? Jeremy? Well, all
right. You hear him.
Yeah, let's try to reconnect with Mr. JSchill on Twitter at JSchill. I mean, we were going on about Atlanta, and he was over there doing who knows what, so we'll reconnect with him. You know, I was I got to be honest, it's chilly. Maybe that's hell freezing over now that the Georgia's sports team has won. It's chilly in this studio today. I was going to go turn on the heater. And it reminded me, when I got up this morning and I walked out to my car, I saw a woman going for a walk. She was in a bubble coat, a bubble jacket with a winter cap on, winter gloves on, in boots, walking. I mean, it's a little chilly, but I don't think it's that cold. It was like, 58 degrees this morning. And it reminded me of when I was living in Florida, and whenever it got down to about 50 degrees, and the news report in the morning was always hilarious. Don't let your kids wait out for the bus. It's cold out there. Make sure they leave with their gloves and hats first. It's not that cold. Now, I don't like the cold. But I saw that woman this morning all bundled up. I thought, what is going on? All right, anyways. Jeremy's back with us to talk some golf on Twitter at JSchill. Jeremy, what's going on? How are you?
Hello, Luke. Sorry for the technical issues leading in, but glad we're able to connect on what is a very interesting weekend for a sport that usually is not in the spotlight this time of year.
Yes, absolutely. Before we get to all the golf stuff, one question. You are a Yankees fan. Now, I was rooting against the Astros strictly because I don't like a team that cheats to win the World Series. A lot of Yankee fans feel slighted because of how things played out in 2017. So, did you have any sort of strong opinion about the World Series, any rooting interest against the Astros because of what happened in the past?
No.
Ah.
I basically just wanted baseball back to the baseball we know.
Yeah.
And two, I mean, these bullpen games, words I can't say on this, call. Just the usage of relievers. I love Jason Stark's double, what's the name of that thing? Where when you pull your starter, you also
double switch
Let's try this again, folks. Fourth time. Stuttering is a weird thing. It also helps people out there. So it's an interesting thing, and I don't know where they're going to go with it, but we shall see over time.
Yeah, the idea of, if you pull your starter early, you have to lose,
DH.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, not a bad idea. I'm with you. I've complained about it on air the last couple of weeks. I always liked, relying on an ace starter in a big game instead of seven relievers, but that's the way baseball has gone. All right, let's talk some golf with Jeremy as we do this time every week. He's on Twitter at Jay Shill, writes for PGA Magazine. It seems like we've had a lot of first winners in the golf world lately, and I know Lucas Herbert broke through in Bermuda for his first PGA Tour win over this past weekend, but I guess you weren't that surprised with what Herbert was able to do.
No, I was not, and that's because while he's new to the PGA Tour, he's not new to the European Tour, and he has two wins on that tour, including earlier this year at the Irish Open. Why is that significant? Because Sunday in Bermuda was cool, wet, and windy. What usually happens at the Irish Open? Cool, wet, and windy. And he said going into Sunday, I welcome these conditions. I'm used to these conditions. He's originally from Australia, but I'm used to playing in this stuff. And he seemed by far the most comfortable out there last Sunday. And I think it really paid off. He had a great mindset coming in. He shot 69, which is not that easy to do on a really hard weather day. And we all knew that Lucas Herbert was a someone to keep an eye on long term. What this proved is that he's somebody that will be in contention at a major or a world golf championship sooner rather than later. That's what Sunday proved.
So Herbert gets the win. Patrick Reed tied as one of the runner-ups. And why was that important? Or what did you take away from Patrick Reed with his performance over the weekend?
So let's put aside the issues that he had with double pneumonia for a second.
Yeah,
just shooting 65 in windy conditions is just next to impossible. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Scott Stallings shot 62, Luke, and moved up 45 places. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So for Reed, A, it's tremendous golf. B, it's basically become evident that he was left off the Ryder Cup team because of his illness, double pneumonia, and the fact that he didn't get enough rounds in him to become a factor for Steve Stricker as a Ryder Cup pick. And he said he finally feels stronger, he finally feels like himself, and lo and behold, hello, here we are now back with Patrick Reed contending at an event and almost winning. So for anybody out there, now look, he's a controversial figure. He's had accusations of cheating, himself. But for those who are Reed fans or disrespect good golf, even if you disrespect the person, he's definitely somebody to keep an eye on, and kind of is a good identifier of who's on and who's not.
Talking with Jeremy Schilling, who's on Twitter at Jay Schill. He joins us every Wednesday to talk golf. Our resident golf expert writes for PGA Magazine. Also looking at this past weekend there, Taylor Pendrith finished in, fifth. But I know that you felt, like we talk about the college football playoff rankings or college football, that you can have a good loss. You felt like for Pendrith, it was a good showing this past weekend with just maybe a little bad luck.
Yeah, because that weather is just the worst possible weather you could ask for somebody trying to win their first PGA Tour event. There is a concept called dome golf, which is basically the wind's like 2 miles per hour. It's perfect weather. And this is the opposite of that. And some of this is just not in your hands. And he was in a situation where some of the windiest, most exposed part of the golf courses he faced during the windiest, rainiest, and most exposed part of his round to the weather. And it's just bad luck overall. Yes, there's nerves. There was nerves at the start of his round. But I think overall, there's a lot of positives for Taylor. This is a Canadian who is very highly thought of by both the Canadian golf media and just people around the tour. It's a mile. So I think, a lot of times we talk about nerves and leaderboard gravity. I think this is a case of, yes, there was nerves and leaderboard gravity, but it was also one of the most brutal, situations you'll see for somebody trying to win for their first time on the PGA Tour. And what is significant about that, because people will say that's exactly what Lucas Herbert just did, and I'm like, no. Two different things. Taylor did not win in heavy winds like Lucas did back in Ireland. That stuff transfers. Taylor hasn't quite walked that walk yet.
Let me ask you, we're fans of the XFL and the AAF here in the Mora Midday Show. I've heard about these breakaway tours for golf. What's the latest with that? Is that a similar idea? And what's going on with these apparent potential breakaway tours in the golf world?
Yeah, it's not the same as the XFL and the AAF, because those were going to be off-season football leagues. This would be in-season or maybe not. Here's the basic thing. There is a breakaway tour. Now, these are tours that would involve players signing up with a separate tour, getting a lump sum of money, and then being banned permanently and expelled, essentially, from the PGA Tour. There are two known that are out there. One of them is one that is backed by the Saudis that had a name, the Super League Golf, and then after the whole Super League soccer fiasco, dropped that name. It currently does not have a name. They announced Greg Norman as their forthcoming commissioner, and the bottom line from last week is that it's a whole bunch of, we have this money, we have this idea. They have nobody signed to the bottom line. And that is significant, because at the end of the day, you need players to be able to spark a move, and we got nothing here. Number two, then there's Premier League Golf, the PLG, also known by some as the PGL, which is Premier Golf League. Can get very confusing. They came out with a new proposal about 3 days ago wanting to work with the PGA Tour that would save some of the higher upper echelon PGA Tour events while revamping the rest of the schedule. It's a lot of talk. It's not a lot of action, and we don't have any names that have been associated and signed to the bottom line with these breakaway tours, leagues, or people that could be partners. We're a long way off from anything happening, for sure. So if you're in golf media or in the inside golf world, there's some interesting Twitter DMs going on, but I can't tell you anything on the record. But I just wanted to tell the folks out there that from a fan perspective, you may see the Greg Norman headlines. You may see the PGL, PLG headlines. This is a long way from being something that's actually going to happen. And just be patient, because we should know more by probably Christmas.
This weekend, starting tomorrow, we have the Worldwide Technology Championship at Mayakoba in Mexico, if I'm saying that correctly. These tournaments always have...
Mayakoba.
All right, close. I was close. Yeah, closer than I thought I'd be. These are always such mouthfuls, these names of these tournaments. What should we expect for what's going to happen, what we should see play out this weekend there?
This is the last big event before Tiger's fun money attempt. down there in the Bahamas for a lot of the big names. You've got Koepka and Will Zalatoris and Kuchar and Lowry and Horschel and Anser and Finau and Victor Hovland, who's the defending champion, and Ricky Fowler and Sergio and Matt Fitzpatrick and Henrik and Seamus Power. Have I gotten you excited yet, Luke?
Absolutely.
So this is a golf course that fits a lot of different types of players. You can't hit it way offline because there's very little rough on this golf course. There's just a lot of bushes that you can't really hit it at and hit out of. But what's really interesting about this event, and by the way, folks, is the same golf course and everything as the previous 14 years, just a brand new sponsor and a brand new name, but the exact same, you know, thing otherwise, is we've seen a bunch of different types of players win here, bombers versus no bombers. But what is really interesting about this is that this is an event, a fall event, that was kind of thought of as an afterthought, so to speak. And slowly but surely, the field got better and better and better. This is the best field they have ever seen. And how would you describe to the listeners out there professional friendships? The way that I describe it is, it's somebody who I would not have over for dinner per se, but I know that I can reach out. I may have their number. I may not have their number if I have a question or something like that. How would you describe professional friendships to the folks out there?
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty good. I was trying to think about it, and I think you nailed it because I know a lot of people like that. I could reach them out to come on the show or whatever, but I'm not going to text them to go watch a movie.
Right. So Brent Packer, who is the Golf Channel tournament producer, and who has produced this event for the last, I don't know, probably 10 years, he sent me a message about 5 years ago and said, I have no idea why more people don't come here. It's the best hospitality all year. All the restaurants you could want are right there. All the amenities, everything these guys would want is right on site. So the logistics work. He had no idea why. And it was really Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler who got the word out, and this has grown and grown and grown. Even though Jordan's not here because his wife Annie is about to have a baby, this field has gotten better and better and better, and they just realized that it's a beach and ocean spot to spend, for some of them, their last event of the season the calendar year. So it's become a really interesting thing, and I think that you're going to see a lot of fun golf, a lot of relaxing golf. But this is a golf course that if you get offline, you are in trouble. So watch for guys that are really, really good ball strikers. And that's why Ricky Fowler is my pick this week, because Ricky, I believe, has finally turned the corner. He's about to become a dad. He had to get permission, Luke, from his wife, Allison, just to play this week, make sure everything was okay back at home with the baby. So I think he wants to end this portion of his life on a good note and then hand it off to the next stage of his life as a father. But it's guys like him. It's guys like Aaron Wise. It's guys like Hovland, who won last year. May not be the longest, but they're long enough and they're accurate enough. And if you get a hot putter, the combination of those things can really make it ride.
All right. Keep an eye out on Ricky Fowler this weekend. Book it. See what happens down there in Mexico this weekend on the tour. He joins us every Wednesday to talk golf. Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert, on Twitter at Jay Schill, writes for PGA Magazine. Jeremy, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next week.
Nothing about Mike White?
Oh, yeah. You know, I forgot. There's so much going on this week between the Braves, the college football playoff rankings. I totally forgot what even happened in the NFL on Sunday, and now he's going to play. We get to watch him on Thursday Night Football tomorrow. Who do you want to be the quarterback moving forward, Zach Wilson, or are we riding with Mike White as the future of the franchise?
So Luke texts me about this, and I'm like, yes, bring on the quarterback controversy.
Yeah.
I have no idea who I want my quarterback long-term. This could be a flash in the pan. Right now I would go with the hot hand, which is Mike White. He seems to have much better operational skills for the offense. The thing I find really fascinating, Luke, Robert Saleh has not committed to Zach Wilson being the quarterback once he's healthy, yet the Jets signed his personal quarterback coach from back in Utah to be on their staff for the rest of the year. It's a very interesting maneuver, a move And it makes you wonder how they are going to maneuver once he's healthy. But why not go with Mike White? He had a blast out there, kept the offense loose, and most importantly was efficient. Those two picks were basically not his fault. They were tip balls. So, you know, maybe some poor decisions, but it was just such a better offense. So.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, he was great, but he knocked me out of my survivor pool, so I hate him as well. Mike White played great on Sunday.
I apologize, Luke. Yeah. I apologize. Yeah. But thank you for having me, and apologies for all the technical and vocal issues during this chat.
All good. Appreciate it, as always. We'll catch up with you next week. Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. Yeah, that damn Mike White. Now you get to watch him on national TV Thursday Night Football tomorrow against the Colts, and the Colts are favored by 10.5, which is a big number. We'll see. Salah, by the way, real quickly, just to touch on that, because I always find this funny. It was like when Kyle Shanahan was asked a question about what was he asked? Was it when he was asked if Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be on the roster? He was asked some sort of question, right, about Sunday or who was going to play Sunday, and his response was like, I don't even know who's going to be alive on Sunday, which was very morbid, but it was a silly cop-out. Like, oh, I can't give you an answer because I can't predict. I don't know what it's going to even be like on Sunday. I can't commit to anything. I mean, come on, just give us an answer. As we sit here today, who do you think is going to be the quarterback? Robert Saleh, same idea. He said that something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing here, of, you know, anything's possible. He's not going to confirm one quarterback or the other, Mike White or Zach Wilson, as his starter the rest of the way. And then they asked a follow-up about it. Like, oh, how come you haven't been able to pick one or the other? You don't want to say Mike White's going to be your starter or Zach Wilson be the starter when he comes back. And Saleh's response was something along the lines of like, well, we don't know what could happen by the time Zach Wilson comes back. I always hate these cop-outs. Like, I don't know. Things could change tomorrow. Mike White could get injured tomorrow. Yeah, of course. But as we sit here today, knowing what we know, you know, who do you give the upper hand to being your starting quarterback moving forward? Instead of these silly circle games these coaches play, like, oh, I don't know. He could get hurt tomorrow. We may not even be here next week. Who knows what's going to happen? Just answer the question instead of your silly little runarounds. Anyways. Appreciate the time from Jeremy, as always. Coming up, we heard from Dave Bartu last hour. I'll give you my takeaways from the initial college football playoff rankings. My thoughts, what stood out to me, plus my big winner and loser from last night as well. We're celebrating the Braves World Series championship here this afternoon, the first since 95. What song is this?
Bad Street USA from the Fabulous Freebirds.
Oh.
About Bad Street Atlanta GA.
That's right. You know it. World Series champions. We'll break down the college football playoff rankings coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
My thoughts from the first college football playoff ranking last night and who the big winner and loser was. Get to that here in the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow as we celebrate a Braves World Series title here on ESPN Radio. I know this song, but I can't place it. Who's this? Or what's the connection?
It's So Into You by Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Ah, that's who it is.
See, here's another thing. You can either name it after a city or... Right. A place,
uh-huh.
Or you can incorporate the place into the name. Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Yeah.
Black Oak, Arkansas.
Ah.
New York Dolls.
That's right. Yeah. Love the New York Dolls. So into the Braves today. That World Series championship last night. I think that's what they wrote this song about, right? Yeah, of course.
They knew it was going to happen all those years later.
Of course. They knew eventually. This team eventually is going to have to win a couple of championships with all... the regular season success they have. We'll continue to react to that throughout the afternoon. But we had the college football playoff rankings last night. What a night for Georgia sports fans. You get the Braves as the number one team in Major League Baseball winning the World Series. You get Georgia, which we knew all along, but you actually get to see it. Number one on the list. That was the biggest surprise last night, right? What was this committee thinking, putting Georgia number one? That was obviously the most obvious part of this whole thing. My takeaways. I got a few takeaways, then I'll give you my big winner and loser from last night, because, of course, this is still so early. Dave Bartu joined us last hour and broke a lot of it down. If you missed that, find it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston. But it lays the foundation, this first ranking. There's still so much that is going to change. It's obviously a very fluid situation, but you work from this. It's like a sketch or an outline, right? You work off of this first model. You're going to move teams up and down based off of where we have them now. So that's why the first one is important to me, because it lays that foundation. The second one, not so much, right? The third one, not as much. There's going to be some slight changes. But that first one, everything comes back to this original ranking. We work off of this now moving forward. And you're going to say, oh, this team, okay, they jump ahead of this team. Oh, this team moves down, right? You're going to adjust according to this initial ranking. So my takeaways, five of them. Number one, Cincinnati being put number six. Now, I give you what my ranking would be, and I had Cincinnati outside of the top four as well. I had them five. They ended up being, what, six, right? What this tells me, and Dave reiterated it last hour, is that the committee is still not interested in the group of five. And the playoff committee was wiser than the AP top 25 poll. I said this at the time when Cincinnati reached the top four of the top 25 poll. That once you put them in the top four, unless they lose, you can't take them out. If you already believe that they're the number two team in the country already because of what they accomplished, and then they continue to win all of their games moving forward, how could you then come back and say, yeah, well, actually, they were the fifth best team? Well, what do you mean? When they were 8-0, you told me they were the second best, so how come at 13-0, they're now the fifth best team? It doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't want to hear this argument, well, these other teams, they won by more, they had better wins. Okay, you already told me this team with their schedule was the second-best team, and then all they did was continue to win games, and you dropped them for it. So the committee avoided that scenario. And last night they said, yeah, we're not putting Cincinnati in the top four, because if we do, the only way we're going to get them out of there is if they lose, because otherwise there's going to be uproar. Even if other teams win out the rest of the way and the committee would make the case that they leapfrogged Cincinnati, it would still cause a big issue and drama. And then we'd have this debate about comparing wins and conferences and this and that. It's easier to just leave them out of the top four instead of putting them at number two and then, or number three or even number four, and then needing them to lose in order to fall back. Because it would not be a good look for the committee if they started to drop Cincinnati back while they were winning all their games. So what they did was they gave themselves a buffer zone. They made it really challenging on Cincinnati to get into the top four. My other takeaway, number two takeaway from last night, Alabama being put at number two. Now, Dave Bartu, when he joined us last hour, said no surprise. They were number two in his model. They should be the number two team. But I think what you do here, and Dave disagreed with me, but I think, and Dave knows, he knows this thing a lot better than most people, the college football playoff ranking. But I think by putting Alabama at number two, you do leave the door open. Maybe not much. Maybe just a crack. Maybe you tried to close the door, but you didn't actually lock it in, right? It didn't fully close. It looks closed, but you can push it open. Maybe that's all it is. But by putting Alabama at number two instead of, say, number four, you gave them more breathing room, a larger buffer zone as well, that potentially, depending on what else happens, if they lose in the SEC championship, could Alabama be the first two-loss team to ever make the playoff? If you put them at number four, that margin is much slimmer, right? But you put them at number two, depending on what else happens, and maybe it would require a lot of help elsewhere. But they could lose to Georgia, the number one team in the country, and go from number two in the rankings to, say, just number four, or even three, and they're still in the playoff field. But if you put them at number four already, and then they lose a second game, right? Then you're going to have to bump them out of the four. So Alabama at number two, and I know Dave says the model says they should be, they are the number two team, this and that. I think it's also done because it provides more buffer room to be able to keep Bama in the top four. Because when you look at Alabama, really, what's the most impressive win they have this year? And they lost to, at the time, an unranked Texas A&M team with a backup quarterback. I know they passed the eye test, and we believe they're the second-best team in football. Right, I mean, they had to sweat it out with Florida, who's now 500. That doesn't look like that great of a opponent or a win anymore. I mean, Florida is a 500 team with a coach on the hot seat. And Alabama, it was a four-point game for them. But otherwise, you know, what are the great wins for Alabama right now? Now, they still have Auburn on their schedule. Most likely will play Georgia in the SEC title game. I think they get there. But otherwise, you know, Miami doesn't look so good anymore. Florida doesn't look so good anymore. Ole Miss This is the one good win you have against a ranked team that is remaining there, but we'll see if Ole Miss drops out of the top 25. But by keeping Alabama at number two, even if it's a small chance, you give yourself a better chance of leaving them in the top four with a second loss. My third takeaway from last night, speaking of Alabama, when you look at the top four teams in this ranking, all four coaches have ties to Nick Saban. Now, obviously, Nick Saban is one of them. But the other three coaches all worked under Saban. So unlike Bill Belichick and his coaching tree, which doesn't work out in the NFL, for Saban, the best programs right now are all being led by Nick Saban guys. And so when you get into the hiring process now, if you're LSU, even if you're USC, if you're some of these other programs, it seems too obvious. It seems like an easy way out. Just because somebody coaches with Saban doesn't mean they're going to work. Mel Tucker seems to be a good coach. Right? Kirby Smart has done a good job at Georgia. But you maybe have to start your search there. Try to find that next guy from the Saban coaching tree. My fourth takeaway is that when you look at these rankings, and again, Dave would probably disagree with this idea, but when I look at these rankings, I think you can make a strong case for probably all nine teams. What would that case be? For Georgia, just don't lose twice. If Georgia loses once, regular season or in the SEC championship, they're still in. For Alabama, you have to win out. You'll stay in the top four. Michigan State, if they win the Big Ten, they'll be in. For Oregon, they don't necessarily control their own destiny, right? If they win out, they may need a little help. But for Oregon, you win out, maybe you get a little help along the way. You're in. For Ohio State, if you win the Big Ten, right, you stand a pretty good chance. Michigan, if you win the Big Ten, you stand a pretty good chance. Oklahoma, if you win out and start to have some impressive victories, you stand a good chance. Wake Forest is a long shot, but if you win out, get some impressive wins, maybe a little help, you could get in. And for Cincinnati, it may take some prayers, but you still have a shot being at number six. You just need some chaos around you. And my last takeaway, my fifth takeaway from last night, I'll say it again, we do not need more than four playoff teams. Because based off of these rankings, they already put out, Action Network put out what their spreads would be for the playoffs. Number one Georgia would be favored by 15 against number four Oregon. Number two, Alabama, would be favored by 18 against Michigan State. Why do we need more of these games? As of right now, if the season were to end today, the two playoff games, the two semifinal games, would have favorites of more than two touchdowns. And you tell me that we need more teams in the playoff? Vegas sees that large of a gap between the top two teams and everybody else. So why do we need to put then the number 12 team in the playoff to face, you know, a top team? We don't. We don't even need four. Right, this year, it's Alabama, Georgia, and then we're trying to figure out, like, okay, who else? And not in that order, by the way. Georgia, obviously, is number one, then Alabama. And then we're trying to figure out, okay, like, who's the best of the rest? Those are my five takeaways from last night. In regards to Cincinnati, by the way, they also put out all the numbers. Cincinnati would be a 5.5-point favorite over Michigan State on a neutral field. They would be a 3-point favorite against number four Oregon. They would be a pick'em against number seven Michigan. They'd be a 2.5-point dog against Oklahoma and a 9-point dog against Ohio State. So that's how Vegas sees it. Cincinnati may not have the resume. You don't think they can match up against these other teams. But in the eyes of Vegas, to the teams in front of Cincinnati, they would be favored against Oregon and Michigan State on a neutral field. They'd be a pick 'em against Michigan. They'd be a slight underdog against Oklahoma. And they'd be a pretty heavy underdog against Ohio State. Vegas sees Ohio State and Oklahoma as those two next best teams behind Alabama and Georgia, and Cincinnati as number five. Now, quickly, my winner and loser from last night. The winner, I would say, is Oregon for being put in the top four. That was surprising to me because the Pac-12 has largely been forgotten. So to put Oregon number four ahead of an Ohio State, an Oklahoma, Cincinnati not getting any respect, but Oregon does, I think that's a good sign from the committee. Doesn't mean Oregon will be there at the end of the year, but we have forgotten about the Pac-12 for years. And now maybe Oregon is a top four team. With that said, they do still need some help. Dave breaks it down that even if Oregon wins out and Ohio State wins out, even though Oregon beat Ohio State would have the better resume and they would go in over Oregon. He also believes that, you know, if Alabama beats Georgia, both of those would go in over Oregon. If Oklahoma wins out, they would go in over Oregon. So Oregon doesn't necessarily control their own destiny. But they are in a good spot in that top four to begin, and it also just shows the committee thinking of the Big 12 once again. And then the loser last night to me is the Big 12, because Oklahoma was ranked where they were at number 8, and I don't have an issue with that, but what it shows is that for the Big 12 moving forward, when you lose Oklahoma and Texas, this is what you have to rely on, that Oklahoma is undefeated. And granted, they haven't played very well for most of their games this year, but their level of competition has been weak enough that with a perfect record, you still slot them at number 8. And that's going up against the teams that are going to have to carry this conference moving forward without Oklahoma and Texas. We're already kind of looking past the Big 12 this year, still with an undefeated Oklahoma team. Imagine what it'll look like without Oklahoma and Texas relying on the rest of these teams. So not great for the Big 12. Similar to the ACC. Now, Wake Forest doesn't have a great resume. They had a weak non-conference schedule. They haven't beaten a ranked team all year. But the ACC, something we've known for the last couple of years, without Clemson, they're in big trouble. And without Clemson last night, relying on Wake Forest, they didn't get much respect either from the committee, and they stand to be a bit of a long shot despite being undefeated in the ACC. So not great for the Big 12 and the ACC. For the Big 12, you saw that outside of Oklahoma, we really don't have much. And the ACC, you saw that outside of when Clemson's really good and dominant, yeah, we really don't have much, which is what we've known for a while. Real quick before we go, Kirk Herbstreit had this to say about Oklahoma's ranking at number 8 in the playoff rankings last night.
Maybe that game.
I say congratulations to the committee, putting them at 8. This is a team that from the Tulane game. What's Tulane? 1-8, Reese?
Yeah.
From the Tulane game at the beginning of the year until last week against Texas Tech, they have not played a complete game. Caleb Williams has helped light a fire on the offense. This defense has not played up to their standard. They have got to start taking themselves more serious and the opponent more serious and play up to their capabilities in every phase of the game, because they've only maybe put one game together, and that was last week. This team almost looks bored, and they better light a fuse quickly or they're going to get left behind.
Herbstreit last night talking about Oklahoma, who does have Baylor and Oklahoma State still left, so they have a chance to get a couple of good wins and maybe impressive wins, right? Maybe he needs I know Dave Bartu hates the term, but maybe they need some style points along the way against those two teams. Coming up, a big matchup Saturday for Florida and South Carolina. We'll get to that. Plus, we'll continue to celebrate the Braves' World Series win last night and break down these college football playoff rankings as well. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio. Oh, first.
Lou suggested this one.
Yeah, what do we got here?
Little Feet with O Atlanta.
Oh, all right, Little Feet will take us out. I was once known as Littlefoot in my troop as a kid. Little Feet will take us out as we celebrate the Braves' World Series victory. It's the Mar Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Georgia. Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Don't forget to get your picks in for this weekend of football. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com and get your picks in by 5 p.m. Friday for our weekly Pick'em contest. The winner will get themselves a Fan Zone gift card. Online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Our pick'em contest going to 5 p.m. on Friday as we celebrate the Braves' World Series victory. We'll hear how it sounded all around the world coming up. Exercise some demons for Georgia sports fans as well. And we'll also get to the Florida Gamecock game on Saturday coming up in a little bit, but I want to make sure we have enough time, so I'll save that for next hour because we're a little shorter on time now. And instead, let me move some things around and get to this. I teased this yesterday, and we ran out of time yesterday. But a couple of things tying up some loose ends from Halloween in the sports world. How invested would you get in a Halloween costume? Because Aaron Rodgers said the reason he was growing out his hair, he had said this back in the summer, was for his Halloween costume. So then I was very curious, okay, what is he going to go as? He ended up dressing up as John Wick. And that's Keanu Reeves' character who has the long hair, the beard. So Rodgers said it was a year in the making. He's been growing out his hair for a year waiting for this moment. He said, you know what? I would love to be John Wick for Halloween. I don't know if somebody ever told him that, like, hey, you look like Keanu Reeves. Because he doesn't really look like him. But he felt like that was a great costume. So he was going to grow his hair out for a year so he could look more like John Wick. I mean, maybe he wanted long hair anyways, and this was, you know, just part of it. He's had his hair longer at times. But for me, forget that. I'm just going to get a wig. And Rodgers has plenty of money. I'll find a really good wig. I don't know if I need to invest a year of my life to make sure I have a more accurate Halloween costume. Joe, what is the most detailed you ever got for a Halloween costume? You ever go all in for one of your costumes growing up?
As far as...
I don't know,
like trying to make something or just going purchasing a really cool costume?
No. See, that's easy. Going to the store and purchasing something, that's easy. You ever invest, like, time or resources, like, really go all in, spend a lot of time to master your costume?
Well, there's been a few Halloweens. I either went as Gene Simmons or Ace Frehley from Kiss, and so I had to take the time to paint my face.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty tough. Detailed. Similar for me. I've always told you I don't like dressing up. Even though I love Halloween, I don't like dressing up. So I would always go as, like, the same things every year as a kid. But one year I went as the wrestler Sting, and my mother had to paint my face. And that was pretty good. So that was the one. You know, you got to sit down, and you're a kid, and, you know, you don't have the patience. And my mom did a good job painting the Sting's face on me. And I went out with my wig on and my painted face and my Sting garb, and I went out to go be the pro wrestler Sting as I went trick-or-treating.
And now the ladies can get in on it.
Yeah?
Well, because there's an NWA wrestler named Jenna Side, paints her face.
Oh.
And then, of course, Thunder Rosa, who paints half her face.
Oh, okay.
And she should work pretty well because, in fact, Jim Cornette once made the comment about her. She's so scary, you can put a picture of her in every prison and it would cure all the sex offenders.
Well, there you go. You could go as her for Halloween. Start planning now, a year in the making, like Aaron Rodgers. But the biggest news with Aaron Rodgers today is actually that he tested positive for COVID-19. So maybe he had a little too much fun on Halloween. And the costume did look really good. He marked his face with, you know, the same injuries that Reeves' character had at a certain part of the movie. But Rodgers ended up testing positive for COVID, so he's unavailable this week against the Chiefs. Supposed to be a big-time matchup, Packers-Chiefs. Rodgers now unable to play, and that line jumped from 1 to now 8 without Aaron Rodgers. So maybe he had a little too much fun. Remember, they played on Thursday, so he had Halloween weekend off. Probably went to a party, who knows what, and apparently came down with COVID. And then the big thing also, the reason why he's out Sunday is because he's not vaccinated. And so if you are vaccinated, it's a lot easier of a process. You just need, you know, like 2 negative tests. You could come back within like 48 hours. If you're unvaccinated, it's a longer process. So Rodgers is unavailable on Sunday. And this was after he told the media in August that he was vaccinated. Now, I don't care if you are or you aren't. For Rodgers, this is a bit of a dilemma for the team. Fortunately, they're in first place. They have a good record. You know, but this is a big game going to Kansas City and you don't have your star quarterback. Because he's unavailable for who knows what. But just the lying, I don't like, one way or the other, whether you have it or don't have it. Right? Don't tell the media one thing. In August, he said, oh, yeah, I am. Turns out he's not, and he has to miss the game this week. So no Aaron Rodgers will get our first look at Jordan Love in his first career start. By the way, also speaking of Halloween, Von Miller was traded this week for the Broncos, and apparently in large reason because of a Halloween party this past weekend. Von Miller threw a Halloween party, but then I guess, you know, because the team wasn't playing too well, he kind of had second thoughts, like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't do this. And then he said, okay, I'll do the Halloween party, but I want all you guys to chip in. So he Venmo requested his teammates for money for his own Halloween party. And the teammates said, what? No, we're not paying for this Halloween party. This was your idea. This is your doing. And anyways, it apparently caused a real problem in the locker room and was a big reason why the Broncos were willing to trade him at the deadline this past week. And I don't blame the teammates. If you invite me somewhere, right, if you ask me out to dinner, you invite me out to dinner, don't expect me to then contribute. No, those are just the rules. Don't invite me. Right, don't invite me somewhere and then make me pay. Like, hey, you want to come to the game with me tonight? Sure, that'd be great. And then once you get there, say, by the way, it's $50 for the tickets. What are you talking about? You invited me to the game. Otherwise, I would have just went and bought my own tickets. When you invite somebody, the assumption is that it's being covered. That's why you're inviting them. If you invite some, hey, come over to my house for the games. Okay, you are trying to be nice when you show up with food, but the expectation shouldn't be that you bring, you know, the food to the party. No, that's their job as a host, as they invite you over. So no problem there. And the last thing was LeBron James dressed as Freddy Krueger. I have to say, Freddy Krueger is never my favorite, and the costume looks really good for LeBron. Freddy Krueger is never my favorite, but then I was thinking about it over the weekend. Freddy Krueger is like the ultimate Halloween villain because he gets you in your dreams, in your sleep. And when you watch a scary movie, what are you most afraid of, right? You like want to go to sleep. And then now you're fearful that once you do go to sleep, that's when Freddy Krueger is going to get you. It's the ultimate idea. That's the best idea. He gets you in your dreams. Talk about really scaring kids. Now he definitely don't want to sleep because Freddy Krueger, that's when he's going to get you. So you have Von Miller traded because of Halloween. You have Aaron Rodgers out this Sunday, maybe because of a Halloween party. And you have LeBron's kids unable to sleep now because of Freddy Krueger. So there you go. Happy Halloween. We'll wrap up Hour 2 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
The world he left behind not so long ago. He's leaving,
leaving.
On that midnight train to Georgia.
Now here's a great song. Wrapping up Hour 2 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio as we celebrate the Braves World Series championship last night.
Plus, Gladys Knight is from Atlanta.
There you go. Before we go here in Hour 2, you can always join the conversation. 843-721-9500. Let's sneak one in on the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I was a little worried last night. Did Bobby Hart make it to work today?
Oh, yeah. He floated
in. Okay, I just want to make sure because I'm watching a ball game, and I did get my new remote. And on my other TV, I put on the Channel 4 News.
Uh-huh.
And Scotty then comes on about 25 after. The game's not over yet. And he has his phone and with a Bobby Hart live on the phone. But he shows it, and I said, something's wrong here. Bobby Hart has his hat on backwards, a smile on his face is glowing, and that's about all you could get. So I thought maybe he was at the mission on Meeting Street or at some homeless shelter or whatever. So I was worried. So my girlfriend says, well, call around. So I called the mission center down on Meeting Street. I called whatever in case he needed bail money. I even called the detention center, and I used his alias, the Big Kahuna, and I also used Bobby Harton. He wasn't there, so I guess he was on the porch. That's the only thing I can think of what he was doing, because he didn't look too good. And I don't think it was Crown Royal. I think it was a lot more than that. Maybe Carla kicked him out of the house.